Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, your community hospital with a rich heritage that dates back to before New Mexico was a state. We've been improving the health of the Four Corners since 1910. As a nonprofit hospital, San Juan Regional Medical Center is a values-driven organization. We strive to deliver on our mission to personalize health care and create vitality and enthusiasm in healing. We are here for you when you need us, offering a comprehensive range of inpatient, outpatient, and emergency care services. Joining me here in the studio is Danielle Sullivan. She is the coordinator of the One Book, One Community program here at San Juan College, actually the director of One Book, One Community. Danielle, good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Thank you for being here. And Tracy Hales-Vass is here, who, of course, listeners to KSJE know, is the host of Right on Four Corners, but also the founder of the One Book, One Community program here at San Juan College. Tracy, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you along with us as well this morning to talk about this year's selection, which is March Book One. And Danielle, talk to me a little bit about this selection. It is the first, is it the first graphic novel?
It is the first graphic novel. We were targeting graphic novels, or we were looking for alternative formats at any rate, or, you know, something a little bit different from what we've done in the past. Especially coming off of last year's pick, which was a very long book.
Yeah.
I thought it would be fun to look at something different. And then we just loved the content and the historical nature, and we were thrilled that we were able to get a book of this caliber
right
for our small school.
And for folks who aren't familiar with the book, March, it really talks about one of the most pivotal moments of the Civil Rights Movement.
That's right. It chronicles Congressman John Lewis's work in the Civil Rights Movement when he was a young man. And one of the things that I really like about this this book is that it shows the role of young people, so it's particularly relevant to integrate into a college setting.
Very good. Tracy Hales-Vass is the founder of One Book, One Community. I mean, these books are chosen to be studied and read in classrooms and taken apart and picked through and to create discussion about these issues that they bring to the forefront, right? That's kind of
what,
right. By design.
When One Book, One Community was founded, the idea was to pick one book a year to share and bridge gaps between classes and between classes and the community, and to bring everybody to the same page.
Right. And so I would think for college students and others, reading a graphic novel wouldn't be that big of a leap, but maybe for some older folks, I'm not pointing any fingers at anybody, including myself, they may take a little bit of convincing to open up a graphic novel to read.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are some instructors even who feel like this isn't, college material. I would definitely argue otherwise. We live in a very visual world, and I think it's making content accessible to audiences that may not otherwise access it, but
right.
Absolutely it does, and hopefully this is a step toward that.
Sure, exactly. Tracy Hales-Vass, I know on your program you don't talk a lot about graphic novels, but maybe this is an emerging trend in the book world.
It is an emerging trend, and I hope to bring some more graphic novelists onto the show.
Right. That would be great. Well, I know in just a few minutes we're going to talk to Nate Powell, who is one of the authors of this book, March Book One. And Mr. Powell is the illustrator as well as one of the authors, correct? And they kind of work, he worked collaboratively with the others.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And will most likely explain, and Andrew Iden and Congressman Lewis began with the story idea, and then Nate Powell came in as an illustrator.
But that's somewhat rare, isn't it, to have a collaborative effort of authors and illustrators working on one particular book?
I think not as rare in this particular genre.
Maybe not. Okay. Tracy Helsvass?
Yes. Authors have a hard time working with each other sometimes.
Some, right?
Yes. So it is interesting to learn about how Nate worked with Andrew and John Lewis.
Right. Interesting. Well, we'll look forward to talking with him in just a few moments, everybody, here on KSJE. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
This program on KSJE is supported by Citizens Trust and Investment Corporation, providing a competent, innovative, and caring team of professionals to serve wealth management, trust administration, employee benefit plans, retirement planning, and estate settlement needs. Find out more about Citizens Trust and Investment Corporation at 505-599-0181. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, your community hospital with a rich heritage that dates back to before New Mexico was a state. We've been improving the health of the Four Corners since 1910. As a nonprofit hospital, San Juan Regional Medical Center is a values-driven organization. We strive to deliver on our mission to personalize health care and create vitality and enthusiasm in healing. We are here for you when you need us, offering a comprehensive range of inpatient, outpatient, and emergency care services.
Studio is Tracy Helsvass, the host of Right on Four Corners here at KSJE.
Hi.
Hi, Tracy. Thank you for being here. Also, Danielle Sullivan is here with us, and she is the director of the One Book, One Community program here at San Juan College.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you for being here. And joining us on the telephone is Nate Powell, who is part of the One Book, One Community selection for this semester, known as March. And Mr. Powell, thank you for calling in this morning.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you with us, and we will get started by talking a bit about the book and your involvement with the book. And Tracy, do you want to get us started?
Yeah, so you were the illustrator of March, is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
So did you write the text then?
No, Andrew Iden essentially wrote the script, and then he and Congressman Lewis developed the story and the structure, out of the historical and the subjective information from Congressman Lewis's experiences. But strictly speaking, Andrew wrote the script after that first process of writing, and then I took the script and flew with it and, became the artist for the trilogy.
And what a good job you've done.
Well, thank you.
So how was it working collaboratively with two other guys?
Oh, well, it's, I've worked with teams of two writers before. Uh-huh. And so in general, like in a general sense, that's something I was acclimated to. I guess at that level, it simply involves working together for long enough to develop a strong sense of what your particular narrative interests are, what your points of focus are, and kind of developing a means by which you can write and draw for each other. So throughout doing the trilogy, the first book of March was more or less a document of the three of us learning to work together as storytellers. And then from our perspective, March book two sort of takes a leap in terms of our teamwork and our narrative sensibilities, because we had finally kind of figured out some of those issues and kinks, and we're able to kind of work more smoothly on a creative level, but it also opened up more room for us to do, to dig deeper with reference, with research, with making use of new information that was available to all of us.
That's very interesting. And they're seamless, too. You can't see the transition from the reader's point of view.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, works really well.
Let me chime in and ask ask you, Mr. Powell, and the reaction that you've gotten to the book that you've been involved with, and when it's been published, of course. What types of reactions are you getting from readers? I would imagine this book is targeted at a different type of reader than maybe would normally be reading about this subject.
Yeah, it depends. I guess before the first book was published, I was very much approaching the work much like I have approached any of my other projects and graphic novels over the years. And I didn't I sort of intentionally tried to avoid anticipating the potential readership or the context in which people would be reading. But I sort of had to reevaluate that entire relationship as soon as the first book was available, beginning to have personal, you know, face-to-face interactions with teachers who had brought their entire class to a signing, family members who had brought their entire family unit, parents who had brought their kids to get to meet Congressman Lewis, people who were involved with the movement, who had spent time in jail or on buses with Congressman Lewis. Very quickly, I realized that I personally was entering a project very unlike anything with which I had ever been involved before. So the responses have been very personal, very powerful. We sort of, you know, we prefer to discuss March as basically a roadmap to change, not just outlining the successes, but also the failures and the criticisms of such a massive, sweeping social movement. But by thinking of it as a roadmap, that's the only way to be able to take it forward and make something new out of this history and out of this collective experience. So, I don't know, it's as personal as, you know, it's very much as personal as it is political. It's as much memoir as history, and it's as much fine art as it is, you know, storytelling. It covers a lot of expanses, but being able to kind of activate the personal experiences of folks involved and sort of give new light and new voice to a lot of experiences which have sort of either been swept under the rug or have been buried through the path of time, the path of history, has been really rewarding and really necessary.
And I think a lot of folks think that, you know, since we went through all this in the 1960s, that things have improved for the better. And recently, it seems, in some places in our country, that we're devolving a little bit instead of evolving. That may be more of a political statement, but I don't mind making it. Would you agree with that, Mr. Powell, or what are your thoughts on the current state of affairs?
Oh, yes. I mean, generally speaking, you are very much correct. I think the larger issue, or I guess the more specific issue, is that being a part of Generation X and having Southerner baby boomer parents learning about the history of the civil rights movement and the history that sort of surrounded me on a geographic and cultural level, but learning that from a generation of kind of white middle-class Southerners in the 1980s, it wasn't until my work on March that not only I was able to reopen up some of those lines of conversation, and my parents were able to kind of reckon with the rest of their legacy as young people in Mississippi in the 50s and 60s, but it sort of provided for a window of reflection and analysis to see that the version of civil rights history that I learned in the 80s was very much a narrative of convenience. The Southern Poverty Law Center identifies this as the nine-word problem, which is that most American kids graduate from high school only knowing nine words about the civil rights movement, which is Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream. And it's very difficult even learning a basic working history as a young person, but not seeing how those dots are supposed to connect to each other, or being taught basic civil rights history as a kid in Alabama in the 80s, and, you know, hearing history always punctuated by this sort of dismissal or exception that it was a very different time. It was almost severed from the continuity that we share historically and culturally. It sort of defangs our collective understanding of the struggles necessary, the gains and the risks from the civil rights movement. And I think that now is one of those times in which the chickens have come home to roost, particularly for my generation and for the baby boomers, where the sort of failures of keeping that history alive and revealing it in all of its complexity has opened our society up to some very big pitfalls involving assumptions of progress, assumptions of safety, assumptions of security. And I think this is something that we're going to have to stress, you know, like progress is something that doesn't just happen once. You know, society making progress is something that requires remaining vigilant about and ensuring that any social progress can be maintained.
There are a lot of nodding heads in the studio as you're talking, Mr. Right. Powell. I just want you to know that. And Daniel Sullivan, let me ask you about the One Book, One Community program, because that is what this is all about, is to bring books like this into the classrooms, not just here at the college, but in high schools and elsewhere in the county, right, to talk about these issues that these books represent.
Right. So that's the underlying premise or overarching premise even of One Book, One Community, is to bring people together to discuss issues. And Tracy, incidentally, who's here, was the founder of the program. So I want to make sure to acknowledge that. But yes, we will have several thousand kids reading this book. So in both of the Farmington High Schools, Rocinante as well, and then the Gear Up New Mexico higher education program has adopted March as well. So the better part of northern New Mexico will have March in its schools in some fashion or another, large scale or perhaps small.
And when we talk about the civil rights movement, there's so many jumping off points to have other conversations and relate it to current events and relate it to history and relate it to minority groups and all. I mean, all these things are popping into my brain.
Well, absolutely. And one of the things that Nate mentioned was the failure to acknowledge the past and where and how that's gotten us to where we are. And one of the events that we're running is in 1974, there were riots here in Farmington, and many people don't talk about that and don't acknowledge that. And we were able to obtain archive photos, and we will be doing a display of that. And Farmington was the subject of a civil rights investigation.
That's right.
And that didn't play a factor in us choosing the book. Once I chose the book, I learned about this. And that just illustrates what Nate's talking about, how we hide some of these problems. And I've certainly been asked that, to be honest. People have said, why are you dredging this up? I think it's dangerous not to.
Mm-hmm. Right. Tracy Hales-Vass, let me have you chime in here.
I agree. I think that this reveals so much. I learned so much, and I was a teenager during this era. But through the book, I learned so much more of what was going on during that time. It brought me much more sympathy and made me more aware of what's going on today.
Right.
I agree. I think learning and relearning the material and sort of sitting at the drawing table, especially between 2012 and 2016, it was inspiring. It was also alarming.
Right.
But it was fascinating in real time to be able to observe and draw parallels between the world of, you know, 1963, 64, 65, and the world of, you know, 2014, 2015, 2016. In real time, as we were working on the trilogy. So as the trilogy progressed, it became a more regular bit of our creative process and our editorial process to kind of have some powwows, mm-hmm. private with ourselves to continually reassess where the narrative of March was in relation to the world around us and be mindful of the question, should we explicitly draw any connections to the world of today within the pages of March? And ultimately what we came back to time and time again is that if we do the job correctly, the reader will be able to make those connections themselves. Our job is to tell the story, to make it plain, to make it unconcealed, and give people the opportunity to make those connections. And ultimately, those connections were kind of unavoidable.
Exactly. Danielle?
So, Nate, when I read the trilogy, one of the things that I noticed is I felt like the books got progressively darker as they went along.
Certainly.
And yet it was juxtaposed in my, you know, I'm an English professor, so I love to, you know, the literary terms, but it was juxtaposed with this framing device of the Obama inauguration. And so to me, that seemed to suggest hope. And I'm curious, A, if that was your intent, and B, would you perceive that differently now than you were when you were writing that, you know, 6 years ago?
Well, I guess, you know, in one way, of course, it's very natural that I do perceive it in a slightly different way now than I did. However, I think that the important takeaway that I can contribute to this as an answer to that question is that as I was entering the role of artist on March, I could see this framing device establishing itself by sort of bookending and framing the events of the civil rights movement through John Lewis's eyes by the 2009 inauguration of Barack Obama. Regardless of the fact that Congressman Lewis and Andrew and I are on the same political page, there was a part of me that was a little wary of what the intention, but what the perceived intention would be of that framing device. That, however, made me a little bit blind, and some of that being, I guess, you know, just coming from middle class white America, made me blind to Congressman Lewis's subjective experience physically being at the 2009 inauguration. And once it took Andrew and the congressman to kind of lay out that the intention behind this, the framing device, was to convey the power of what John Lewis calls the spirit of history at work. And sometimes when I'm hanging out with Congressman Lewis, he has a really fantastic way of, an almost transcendent way of being able to reflect on and dwell in different time periods and sort of contextualize them in his mind and in his heart with what's happening today. And there are moments where sometimes he feels like he's living in the past as much as the present. He feels those echoes kind of concurrently and on top of each other. So as the artist, my job was visually to sort of show that the physical space of the National Mall, going from the steps of the Lincoln Memorial across the reflecting pool, past the Washington Monument, ultimately to the back steps of the U.S. Capitol, allowed John Lewis on that day to sort of see his own path as a young person in the civil rights movement carry him through these physical locations, physically to the steps of the Capitol for the inauguration of the first African-American president. And it's something that I feel like I didn't have a chance to really make it click until halfway through the second book, when we began the campaign for the March on Washington in 1963. I realized that was the prime visual responsibility for that framing device, was to actually convey John Lewis's sense of the spirit of history at work in a tangible way on the side of the National Mall. And it allowed me to kind of see it in a very different and new way.
Interesting. Thank you. Danielle?
Oh,
do you want to add?
No, just I find that really fascinating. So it wasn't just about the inauguration or Obama, but about place and time as well. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and that's sort of that's the middle ground, I think, as a narrative that March occupies. It fully functions as a document of history, but at the same time, it is the subjective experience of one person, more or less. And so there's sort of you're trying to sort of balance these two perspectives. You're making things accurate, responsible, truthful, and historical, but at the same time, we are seeing things through John Lewis's eyes and hearing them in his words. And so there's a degree of being beholden to his perspective and being able to illuminate that while not sacrificing, you know, responsible, accurate historical storytelling.
Nate, I'm with a little bit of history with the One Book Project. The committee resisted for many years bringing in a graphic novel. There was always the perception, right, there was the perception that it was a comic book, it not a serious work of art or literature. And we've turned the corner there. And what is your history with working with graphic novels?
Okay, well, I've been reading comics since I was 3, and I started drawing comics right when I turned 12, started self-publishing them just on a photocopier when I was 14, and just kind of sold them at the one comic book store in town and sold them out of my backpack at school. And I really never turned back from then. So that would have been pre-internet, early 90s Arkansas. So it took a while to develop a real awareness that comic book narratives could exist outside of superhero stories.
Right.
So there was a kind of a major shift in the mid to late 90s for me where I realized that the storytelling possibilities were limitless within comics. That, it, you know, it's a medium as well as a language, but it's not a genre of storytelling. So I've been, I don't know, I guess since about 1998 or 99, I've just kind of been doing my thing, mostly making bizarre, subjectively powerful fiction accounts of people's experiences, but also working with other writers to tell fiction and nonfiction comics. I guess on that note, okay, it's fantastic that March has been able to play a role in the discussion of, you know, the long-awaited legitimizing, the continual argument for legitimizing graphic novels. But I think that a lot of that for the last 30 years or so has always come at the price. It's like a zero-sum game with mainstream comics. People feel like in order for graphic novels or in order for, quote, serious comics to be legitimate, people have to declare that comics have matured and that they're not just superheroes anymore.
Right.
So I feel like it's important for me to point out that 1970s and 80s X-Men comics actually gave me a social conscience in the first place, and I'm far from alone there. I feel like as an 11, 12, 13-year-old, being able to understand things in my own world like racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia, nationalism, through the context of this, you know, fictional superpowered conduit allowed me to see my world through a new lens and a new set of criticisms, and allowed me to kind of react to it and clarify the world I wanted to see as a young person. And I owe all of that to superhero comics. I don't particularly see them as being that divorced from each other. So I feel like there is room for all of that to balance. I'm glad that we have graduated past the point of having to argue about that continuously. But at the same time, it's important to recognize that superhero comics have changed people's lives over and over again for decades at the same time.
Well, that's fascinating.
And I'm with you. I think I grew up in a different place, but right about the same time you did, Nate. And I'm a big fan of superheroes. They were my childhood companions, actually. I lived with them in my head probably more than I did with real people at times.
You bet.
And we are planning, not this semester, but we'll be using the March series all year, a lecture on the social justice of superheroes, because I definitely feel like they have a very high moral barometer, and I find it fascinating. So
certainly
worthy of taking seriously, definitely.
There's always a lot of great programs that go along with the one book selection every year, so glad to hear about that. Danielle, was there any pushback for selecting this book this year from the committee? I mean, again, I guess congratulations for breaking the ceiling on graphic novels.
Well, no, I mean, for us, the opposite.
Right.
We were targeting graphic novels.
Okay.
Or memoir. You know, this is a memoir in that case. But we wanted something different. We wanted something fun. and interesting. And I'm not suggesting that the content is fun, but it is very accessible to
sure.
our students. And the other thing that we really liked was it allowed for all different ages. So we have sixth graders through college students using this book, and that's there aren't many opportunities where you can find a book that would work, and this one does.
Right, which is all part of the One Book, One Community selection process, I think, is to think about the various ways that the book can be used in the classroom and out of the classroom, I would suppose, too. Tracy Hales-Vass, times have changed.
Times have changed.
With graphic novels.
Yes.
Right?
Right. As a former literature teacher, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I was really pleased to, dip my feet into March and learn about how the graphic novel memoir can be used. When you explain how so much of the structure of the art reflects on the story itself, so it adds a certain depth to the story, right?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, this is where, in terms of being a medium, comics, the visual storytelling in comics is inextractable from the text component. My parents were born in the mid 40s, and they've always been fairly comic literate. They grew up on comics too. Thanks to having a cartoonist son, they have become more comics literate. But
of course.
Through my experience with them, I feel like it was interesting to watch their awareness of some of the nonverbal and some of the less explicit modes of communication and information sharing within the comics page, to watch their awareness of those things emerge. It's a strange position that March Book One is, for many people, the first graphic novel they've ever read. And one criticism that I hear from time to time anonymously on the internet is that, when people are used to reading a book in terms of text existing in and of itself, people will feel that there might only be 10 or 15 pages worth of single space text within a 120-page graphic novel like March Book One. But it is the visual information, the narrative information, the flow of time, the ability to relate panels and pages back and forth to each other simultaneously to recontextualize the narrative. These are strengths that are unique to comics, and there is a wealth of information which is communicated not just non-verbally, but sometimes without the conscious awareness of the reader within the pages of a comic. It's something that really is utterly incomparable to other media, including film, because you have such a straight linear relationship to watching a movie or watching something on TV. So it's just something that kind of takes increasing awareness of and acclimation to.
I think that's fascinating. What other works have you produced?
Let's see. My first full-length graphic novel was called Swallow Me Whole. It came out 10 years ago, and it was about these teenage step-siblings in the South with emerging symptoms of different mental disorders. A lot of it was their relationship to each other, their coming of age in relationship to their environment and their community, but also it was just a really trippy, frightening story at times.
It is.
Danielle, you're nodding.
Yeah.
You're familiar with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a trip.
And I did a book called Any Empire that came out 7 years ago that is fiction, but is mostly about my experiences as a G.I. Joe kid in a military family in the Reagan era. And it's about the relationship between violence and imagination. And in some ways, earlier versions of that book were prophetic in terms of outlining the world we live in now. But the book is a series of questions about learning to develop awareness of the structures around you, learning to ask questions about them, and then basically empowering yourself as you grow to be able to push back against those. My newest book just came out. It's called Come Again, and that takes place in the late 70s in a dried-up hippie town in the Ozarks in Arkansas. And it's a horror story with a demon and a curse, but a lot of it are questions about changing ideals and how those relate to your life. It's about the horror of casualness in the face of an obvious crisis, and how to deal with issues that people aren't taking with a certain level of urgency.
So are you doing the writing on those as well as the art?
Yes, I sure am. Generally, I've been a full-time cartoonist for about 9 years, and the way in which I've been able to make ends meet is by balancing writing and drawing my own graphic novels with simultaneous work with other writers on their projects. So I've done adaptations for Rick Riordan, for one of his Percy Jackson and the Olympians spinoffs. I've worked before March. I did another mostly nonfiction work that was set against a backdrop of a forgotten chapter of civil rights movement history. That was called The Silence of Our Friends, and that sort of served as a boot camp for March.
Wow, that's pretty thrilling. Are you working on something new now?
Yes, right. I have one more project that was kind of backed up from my days doing March.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm finishing up in the next year. It's called Two Dead, and it takes place in the 1940s in my hometown of Little Rock, Arkansas. It's written by this friend of mine, Van Jensen, who does a number of things. He's written comics, and he's worked on Stranger Things, and now he publishes an arts magazine out of Atlanta. But it's basically a hard-boiled detective story that's really about post-World War II unspoken PTSD and the trauma of war, the trauma of a society immediately after World War II that is going through a buckling, a social regression back into racial and sexual inequality, and sort of presaging the labor and housing crises that happened in 1947, which are kind of underreported.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly it's about, you know, the monsters that develop from unspoken trauma and unspoken pain, but under the guise of a hard-boiled detective story.
Well, you handle the lightweight stuff, don't you?
Yes. Just a tad of fun.
Right.
Indeed. A reminder to our listeners, we're talking to Nate Powell. He's one of the authors of March Book One, which is the One Book One community selection here at San Juan College, which will be used in classes here at the college and elsewhere in San Juan County, in high schools and other areas. And Mr. Powell is coming to San Juan College campus later on this fall. Danielle Sullivan, how exciting is that to have him actually here to share some of his knowledge firsthand?
Yeah, we're really looking forward to having Nate on campus. And not only will he be on campus, he'll be doing a book signing,
right,
and delivering a talk, but then the next day he's going into the high schools as well to deliver a talk. So he's going to reach a good part of Farmington, New Mexico in that short visit that he's here.
And that is scheduled for October 23rd.
Yes.
Right?
High schools are October 24th.
Very good. Well, we will look forward to that, Mr. Powell, and to be able to meet you and hear more of what you have to say about your connections to March Book One and the other projects that you are working on. And as we've mentioned, Farmington's own unfortunate history with civil rights and equal rights and the demonstrations that we had here in the 1970s involving the Native American community, which is what Danielle brought up earlier, correct?
Yes, that's right. It was chronicled in The Broken Circle, which is a book that you can check out. And we also have on our One Book, One Community page, we have a library guide that was developed by our San Juan College librarian, Barbara Billy. And there's a connection or a link to the photographs from this, if anyone wanted to check that out.
Very interesting. But I think a lot of communities like ours has history with this topic, with this movement, with a group wanting equal rights, wanting to demonstrate, wanting to again remind the rest of the community that there are those among us that aren't being brought along at the same rate as the majority.
Yeah, absolutely. And the social justice aspect of this book was for me, and that's a passion. It's something I advocate for. I study, do research on that and advocate for. So that was a really compelling reason for me to select this, because I really think by framing it in historical context, it allows us to talk a little bit more comfortably about our own past and what's going on now as well.
And that is part of this. And even though this happened in the 1970s in Farmington, there are still some that would say we still have some work to be done.
Oh, absolutely.
In our community and in our nation.
Absolutely. And honoring the past is one of those things.
Right. Very true. Tracy Hales-Vass, right on Four Corners.
Right on Four Corners, yes. I'm excited that everybody's going to be reading this and will be opened up to the graphic novel. And we look forward to your next book when it comes out, too.
Well, thank you. Me too.
So working with, back to the collaborative effort, how much contact did you actually have with John Lewis?
Oh, this is another way in which March was utterly unlike any other project I've worked on. When I'm collaborating with someone, I am constantly in contact with them. But basically, over the course of doing March for 4.5 or 5 years, every weekend, at least once a week, 6 months a year, for years, we were all on the road together, speaking, doing signings, traveling. And while we were physically traveling together, we tried to get as much work done as we could, whether that had to do with showing pages in progress, clarifying details, sort of revisiting memories from the firsthand experience. Andrew and Congressman Lewis worked together in Congressman Lewis's congressional office. They didn't work on March during work hours for obvious ethical reasons. So they had to put in a lot of late nights and weekends. But during the work weeks while I was working on pages actively, I would be speaking to Andrew, and Andrew would have to run some things by the congressman. But I was very fortunate in that I'd be able to get 5 or 10 pages done and then travel and meet with the whole gang somewhere across America and be able to sort of, work with and adapt and refine things in person on the spot. It very much made March a living, breathing thing, and it allowed us in real time to kind of see where our narrative strengths and shortcomings were so that we could adapt to that.
That's amazing.
Very much. Well, Mr. Powell, I think we are out of time here with you today, but thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights and some of the insights of putting this story and this book together. We can't wait to delve more into it as part of the One Book, One Community events this semester here at San Juan College. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nate.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, and we're all really looking forward to be there. So
yeah, we are too. Thank you, Nate.
Very good. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye, y'all.
This program on KSJE is supported by Citizens Trust and Investment Corporation, providing a competent, innovative, and caring team of professionals to serve wealth management, trust administration, employee benefit plans, retirement planning, and estate settlement needs. Find out more about Citizens Trust and Investment Corporation at 505-599-0181.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.